In 1784, a murder conviction hinged on something as simple as torn paper. Investigators matched wadding from a pistol to a ballot sheet in the killer's pocket, the first recorded case of physical evidence solving a crime. This moment marked the beginning of a revolution that would transform justice forever. Before forensic science, convictions relied on confessions, eyewitnesses, and social prejudice. The innocent died alongside the guilty. The guilty walked free. But science changed everything. It gave voice to silent victims and turned crime scenes into storytellers. Today, a single hair, a drop of blood, or a fingerprint can speak louder than any witness. This is the story of how we learned to read these silent testimonies and how they continue to reshape our understanding of truth, justice, and the human capacity for both good and evil. Code Zero, Officer in Need of Assistance. Those words launched crime scene investigator Peter Arnold into one of his most haunting cases, the 2005 murder of PC Sharon Bishenovsky during a travel agency robbery. For 2 weeks, Arnold worked from dawn past midnight, processing every inch of the scene. "That will live with me forever," he later reflected. This is where justice begins, at the crime scene itself. The principle guiding every investigator traces back to Edmond Locard, who established the world's first crime lab in Lyon in 1910. An avid Sherlock Holmes reader, Locard formulated forensic science's golden rule: every contact leaves a trace. When two objects touch, they exchange material evidence: fibers, DNA, fingerprints, blood. The criminal always brings something to the scene and always takes something away. Modern CSIs arrive in paper suits and nitrile gloves, photographing from multiple angles and prioritizing inceptive evidence, clues that might quickly identify perpetrators. In Bishenovsky's case, investigators found bloodstain patterns, 3 9mm bullet casings, a jammed MAC-10 bullet, and a laptop bag used to conceal weapons. Witnesses reported a fleeing silver Toyota RAV4. When located, it yielded a drink carton, water bottle, and motorway service receipt, items providing fingerprints and DNA identifying 6 suspects from a London criminal gang. Though one fled to Somalia disguised in a burqa, investigators eventually secured his extradition. Every perpetrator faced justice because crime scenes never truly stay silent. Fire destroys evidence, but paradoxically, it also preserves it. Fire scene investigators work in dark, smelly, structurally unstable spaces where every step risks collapse or electrocution. Michael Faraday pioneered this work in 1861, investigating the 1844 Haswell Colliery explosion that killed 95 miners and identifying coal dust as a major factor. Tragically, his warnings went unheeded until 440 miners died in a similar Welsh disaster in 1913. Modern investigators, like Niamh Nick Dade, begin by interviewing traumatized eyewitnesses about flame characteristics and smoke color, then examine buildings from exterior to interior, moving from least to most damaged areas. They de-layer scenes like archaeological digs. Fires typically leave V-shaped patterns pointing to their origin, though arson with accelerants creates more complex signatures. The 2012 Philpott case exemplifies this work's life and death stakes. 6 children died when their Derby home burned. Forensic chemist Rebecca Jewell found shell petrol additives on Father Mick Philpott's clothing and total additives on items belonging to his wife Mariad and their accomplice Paul Mosley. The parents had deliberately started the fire, hoping to frame Mick's former mistress in a custody battle, planning to rescue their children, but failing when flames spread too quickly. Perhaps most chilling are serial arsonists like John Orr, a distinguished fire investigator who taught over 1,200 firefighters while secretly being the pillow pyro he was supposed to catch. His own novel described serial arsonists developing a sexual relationship with fire. Sometimes the monster wears a badge. Fingerprinting revolutionized forensic science by providing practical evidence. William Herschel pioneered the technique in 1850s Bengal as a fraud deterrent, while Scottish missionary Henry Folds in Japan discovered fingerprints could be made visible with powder and developed a 10-finger classification system. In 1892, Francisca Rojas murdered her two children near Buenos Aires and blamed neighbor Pedro Velazquez. After torture failed to extract his confession, Inspector Alvarez found a bloody fingerprint on a doorframe matching Rojas, the first conviction by fingerprint evidence. The 1905 Stratton Brothers case cemented fingerprinting's credibility. After Thomas Farrow was beaten to death at his shop, investigators found a greasy print on the empty money box. Charles Collins matched it to Alfred Stratton's thumb with 11 similarity points. Both brothers were hanged. Yet, fingerprinting isn't infallible. In 1997, Detective Constable Shirley McKee was accused of leaving her thumbprint at a murder scene she insisted she'd never entered. Four Scottish experts identified it as hers, leading to dismissal and perjury charges. American experts testified otherwise, securing her acquittal and $750,000 settlement, but her career was destroyed. Research shows experts change conclusions 17% of the time when given contextual information, yet courts still treat fingerprints as infallible. In 1247, Chinese official Song Si documented how flies attracted to blood on a sickle identified a murderer. Today, forensic entomologists like Martin Hull use insects with far greater precision. Hull, who curates collections at London's Natural History Museum while consulting on cases, conducts experiments using pigs' heads in suitcases to study which flies penetrate zip gaps. Blowflies are the gold standard indicators. Their acute sense of smell detects blood or decomposition from over 100 meters away, making them first to colonize corpses. When a female lays eggs, a precise biological clock begins. In summer, UK blowfly eggs take 15 days to become adult flies. By identifying species and growth stages, entomologists determine when eggs were laid, establishing minimum time since death. Beyond timing death, entomology solves unexpected crimes. In Yorkshire, a con artist used maggots to trick an elderly man into selling antique furniture, claiming woodworm infestation. Hall identified these as cranefly larvae that feed on grass roots, not wood, helping police recover the furniture. Forensic pathology complements entomology by cataloging unusual elements found on corpses. Modern pathology began with Andreas Vesalius in the 16th century. Bernard Spilsbury restored the field's credibility through the 1910 Dr. Holly Crippen trial. When Crippen fled aboard the SS Montrose, the first wireless-aided arrest caught him. Spilsbury examined remains under Crippen's cellar floor, identifying a scar he claimed matched Crippen's wife Cora. The jury convicted Crippen. Ironically, modern re-examination found no definite scar tissue, and DNA testing suggested the remains were male, undermining the case that launched his career. The 2010 death of MI6 codebreaker Gareth Williams exemplifies forensic pathology's complexities. Williams's decomposing body was found padlocked inside a sports bag in his bathtub. Three pathologists determined he had been dead approximately 7 days. While a military expert failed 300 times to lock himself in an identical bag, pathologist Dick Seppard believed Williams suffocated after entering alive, reasoning his tightly hushed position would have been difficult for someone else to arrange. The virtual autopsy table, transforming CT and MRI scans into 3D models, now allows pathologists to see deeper without physical cutting, sparing families distress while providing evidence multiple pathologists can examine independently. As Paracelsus noted in 1538, the dose makes the poison. Matteo Orfila systematized toxicology in the early 19th century, testing poisons on thousands of dogs. His expertise proved crucial when Parisian heiress Marie Fortuny Lafarge was accused of poisoning her husband Charles with arsenic. Orfila's refined Marsh test detected arsenic in Charles's organs, leading to Marie's life sentence despite her protests of innocence. Arsenic became notorious as poudre de succession, inheritance powder, being tasteless, odorless, and cheap, with symptoms mimicking common illnesses. In 1918, Charles Norris established the world's first organized medical examiner system in New York City, appointing Alexander Gettler to create America's first forensic toxicology lab. Gettler pioneered toxin identification techniques, studying over 6,000 brains to develop the first scientific scale of intoxication. Following Marie Curie's 1898 discovery of radioactive elements, radium became a miracle substance. At U.S. Radium Corporation's New Jersey factory, young women painted watch faces with radium paint, instructed to point their brushes with their lips. By 1924, workers began dying horribly, jawbones rotting, hips dislocating. When the radium girls sued, forensic pathologists Harrison Martland and Alexander Gettler provided crucial evidence, establishing important legal precedents about industrial poisoning. Dr. Harold Shipman became Britain's most prolific serial killer, murdering approximately 210 patients over 25 years. His downfall came after murdering 81-year-old Kathleen Grundy and forging her will. Toxicologist Julie Evans found fatal morphine levels in Grundy's exhumed body. Shipman hanged himself in prison in 2004, never explaining his murders. Blood analysis remains fundamental to crime investigation. Val Tomlinson, a 32-year veteran, draws crime scenes by hand despite comprehensive photography. This immersion eliminates irrelevant details and highlights crucial elements photographs miss. Blood follows predictable physical laws. Circular stains form from vertical drips, while elliptical stains indicate angled impact. By calculating impact angles of multiple blood stains, analysts determine where blows occurred, often revealing more immediate insights than autopsies about how victims fell, whether they fought back, and if bodies were moved. In 1984, Alec Jeffries discovered DNA profiling at the University of Leicester, revolutionizing forensic science. This gold standard has convicted the guilty and exonerated 314 innocent people in the USA alone. It first proved its worth in 1986, solving the murders of Linda Mann and Don Ashworth, proving both were killed by the same person, not Richard Buckland, who had falsely confessed. A mass screening of 5,000 local men eventually led to Colin Pitchfork's conviction. Early DNA profiling required bloodstains the size of a 10-pence piece. Carrie Mullis's 1983 polymerase chain reaction allowed scientists to amplify tiny samples. By 1999, low copy number profiling required only a few cells, 1/1,000,000th of a grain of salt. Familial DNA searching, first used to solve the 1973 Port Talbot murders by identifying Joseph Cappin through his son's DNA, has solved 54 serious UK crimes. However, because black men are disproportionately represented in DNA databases, familial searches may perpetuate racial disparities, a reminder that even objective science operates within imperfect human systems. Science has transformed justice, replacing confession and prejudice with fingerprints, DNA, insects, and ashes, giving voice to the dead and exposing the guilty. That this power demands responsibility. Wrongful convictions like Sally Clark, Shirley McKee, and Krishna Maharaj prove forensic science is only as reliable as those who interpret it. Evidence doesn't guarantee justice. It offers a chance at it. The real question isn't whether science can solve crimes, but whether we'll use it wisely, fairly, and humbly. Every contact leaves a trace, but it takes wisdom to read what those traces truly mean.